Well, good afternoon. It's so great to see so many of my friends and people that I've worked with over the years. When Myron asked me to come and talk about this, which was a while ago, I mean, so much, as Bill has said, so much has changed. This is happening so quickly, and it varies day by day now as we look at the political environment, what's going on with the presidential campaigns, what's going on in Congress and everything else. What I'd like to do is talk to you about what does it mean for dental education. And when I say dental education in our world, I'm referring to pre-doctoral education, post-doctoral education, dental hygiene, dental assisting, and dental laboratory technology. So, and as Bill said, I guess I wish I did have some personal financial relationships with the Affordable Care, but I don't. So, all right. So I'm going to... I think that for all three of us, we're going to have some threads that are in common, but hopefully that will accumulate at the end with having you and a better understanding of what's going on. So I'm going to talk about some of the background, some of the selected oral health provisions, mostly besides those that Bill talked about, what the future looks like, the legislative challenges to the ACA, and the legal challenges as well. So we know that in March of 2010, Congress passed the Affordable Care Act on a strictly partisan vote, and President Obama signed the health care reform into law on March 23rd. For us at ADEA, we have always said that ADEA believes that any comprehensive reform of the U.S. healthcare system should provide universal coverage to all Americans and access to high-quality, cost-effective oral health care services. That's put us at odds at some of our colleagues in other parts of organized dentistry, but that has been our position all along. Always love this slide, change and hope. So for us, some of the oral health provisions, and as I go along, remember that we have dental schools in 36 states, in the District of Columbia, Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. We have schools and programs of hygiene that we, as I think most of you know, there's about 330 of them now. But they're in many states, not all, but in many states. And then we have hospital-based residencies that are outside of dental schools. So between all of them, we're in all states. And the provisions of the Affordable Care Act not only affect the way that we're going to be educating our students for the future, but also, I think that you know that there are what we call academic dental institutions. Any dental school, hygiene program, hospital-based program, we consider part of a safety net system. And so as we talk about the funding that comes through, a lot of the care that is provided in our institutions is indeed supported by Medicaid or by other governmental means, and a lot of it is free care. We have an educational mission that includes a clinical mission as well. So the access issues, as Bill clearly showed, guarantees oral health care services for children up to age 21, and the HHS Essential Benefits Package has to include an oral pediatric service component. We've always said if we could at least continue what's in EPSDT, that we would be doing well. And it expands Medicaid eligibility for adults and children up to 133% of the federal poverty level. The Title VII issues at HRSA extends the CHIP program through September of 2015 and increases federal support to states to pay for expanded Medicaid coverage. Now, whether the states, how this all works out in terms of the collaborative arrangements and what kind of waivers might come that states would apply for, how this might change is to be determined, yet to be determined. But the Act also creates separate dental section for training in general, pediatric, and public health dentistry. Makes dental public health and dental hygiene programs eligible to apply for training grants that they hadn't been before. It was general practice and pediatric dentistry. Creates new faculty loan repayment program for general, pediatric, and dental public health dentists who agree to serve as full-time faculty. There's a lot of confusion going on about how that loan repayment program would work. There's talk about it being similar to a nursing faculty loan repayment program. We hope that it doesn't The point is that there's faculty loan repayment programs in here, and if anything is a barrier to academic careers right now, it's graduating debt. And if we can enhance these loan repayment programs so that the loan is forgiven and the tax consequences are also forgiven, it means a lot. Included in the Affordable Care Act is a National Healthcare Workforce Commission that we felt was really critical. It was meant to provide comprehensive, unbiased information to Congress and the administration on how to align federal workforce resources with national needs. The membership of this commission, 15 appointed by GAO, including at least one rep from each major healthcare workforce, but then others that would be in it. The healthcare workforce, as it's generally defined, includes dentists, hygienists, and other oral health and public health professionals. The problem is, so the 15 members were appointed. John Maupin, president of Meharry Medical College, was a dentist who was appointed. And as part of what we'll talk about as we go along, so much of this has been authorized by the law, but Congress has control over appropriations, and they were specific not to appropriate any money for the Workforce Commission. So although it has been identified, it has not met, and unlikely to. Other high priority topics in this Workforce Commission were to include the education and training capacity, projected demands, and integration with the healthcare delivery system of the oral healthcare workforce. Why is this doing that? Let's try going back. Huh? Can I go back as fast as I want? Healthcare delivery system of the oral healthcare workforce capacity at all levels, so including dentists, dental hygienists, and others in the system. We were grateful that the IOM, funded essentially by HRSA, had the two reports that came out this year, one in the spring and one in the summer. So at least we had some good data that had been evaluated by a large number of experts. Well, certainly, one of our major strategic directions is to create a diverse workforce while addressing access to care. I think that you know within HRSA, and I think you're going to talk about it in a little bit, but there are centers of excellence, the HCOP program, and the scholarships for disadvantaged students. Again, in the appropriations process, where many in Congress would like to, as they refer to it, starve the beast, that if even though the Affordable Care Act has authorized all of these programs and the expense, the money needs to be appropriated. And it's our understanding that now, in both the House and the Senate, the HCOP program and the SDS programs have been eliminated in the current proposals, and the Centers of Excellence have been reduced by 50%. I think that you're all well aware, if we think of the African-American population as being about 11 or 12% of the U.S. population, only 3.4% of practitioners, of dentists, are African-American. 3.7% of dental faculty are African-American. Hispanic, it's an interesting dichotomy here. Again, Hispanic now 14, 15%. 3.4% of dentists are Hispanic, but 6% of faculty are. Asian Pacific Islanders, around 7% of dentists, but nearly 13% of faculty are Asian Pacific Islanders. Very little American Indian in practice or on faculty, resulting in a pretty white group of practitioners and faculty members. Well, ACA, there was an establishment of a Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Program Payment and Access Commission, the MACPAC. Topics to review be reviewed by the MACPAC include assessment of adult services and Medicaid, payments for dental services, and the process for updating payments to dental health professionals. The membership includes dentists, and there was an authorization of $11 million for FY12. Bert Edelstein, I think most of you know him, is a member, is the dentist member of MACPAC. Then there was to be a separate National Center for Health Workforce Analysis to collect and analyze national data, identify and analyze workforce trends, and support health workforce research, develop data collection guidelines, and create a comparative state data registry. I think that as we go through this, you know, the two things that are the areas where we're coming into some controversy with our friends in organized dentistry, one is new schools. You know that we closed seven dental schools between 1984 and 2000. Some of you have heard me say this. Of seven dental schools, three were Jesuit-related. One was Oral Roberts. The Lord was responding to the prayers of practicing dentists. And we went from graduating 6,300 dentists in 1979, to graduating 3,900 in 1989. We're now back up to graduating about 4,800. But we're nowhere near, even if every dental school that, every university that's talked about a new dental school opened, we wouldn't even be back up to 6,300 where we were in 1979 when many of us graduated. The other area, of course, revolves around the controversy about the dental therapists and other mid-level providers of care. And I think that all of this workforce analysis and the commission, if they can get funded, will help us to better understand those opportunities. The National Health Service Corps certainly benefited. Now, these numbers have changed. Don't be so concerned about the numbers. But what's important for us is that National Health Service Corps, now you can get loan repayment even if you're part-time. It used to be you had to be full-time at a FQHC in order to be eligible for a loan repayment. Now you can be part-time, and it allows even up to 8 hours of teaching per week to count towards that service. So this was a very big thing for us because it helps, again, if we can get somebody working half-time at an FQHC where a lot of dental education occurs, and they can get be half-time on a faculty, as an example, that would be tremendously helpful to us. Another piece, Bill, did you mention teaching? Yeah, you did it. Yes, right. Teaching health centers is something new. Providing money from the trust fund for, although they're GME payments, the actual money comes from HRSA. And what this does is to create an opportunity for payments for expenses of residency training in primary care and in dental public health. There were 11 grants totaling $12 million that were appropriated in FY 2010 with five-year funding. There's one dental grant at Penobscot FQHC in Bangor, Maine. We've been up there a number of times, and the folks from Penobscot are going to be coming to the dean's meeting that we're having this weekend. Very successful, and we're very pleased with the way that has gone. So what's the future? You know that there's legislative challenges. You remember in January, the Republicans voted to repeal it. All the Democrats except three voted against repeal. The Senate rejected the repeal. So, you know, if the Republicans are going to repeal, what are they going to do to replace it? And that's repeal, but what? How are you going to replace it? And that's something that has been difficult for people to get answers to. The House leadership has stated that they're committed to repealing health care reform in the long term. The super committee, it's a big question as to what is going to be their real interaction around the ACA. That's unclear right now. and you know that they've got to come up with their report, what is it, November 18th or something like that? 20?
November 22nd.
Yeah. November 22nd. Who knows what's going to happen there? We wrote to the super committee requesting continuing support for the Title VII programs, the residency programs for health professionals through Medicare, GME, NIH, and the Medicaid program. A lot of unfunded provisions of the ACA. The point is, starve the beast seems to be something that they're trying to do. Legal challenges, you know that there's been five decisions by five different federal appellate courts. Three have supported the ACA as being constitutional. Two have said that it isn't. The major issue revolves around the individual mandate and, you know, how it becomes an interstate commerce issue. It is, I mean, in the legal technicalities. It's obviously going to the Supreme Court. And, you know, I think one way of looking at it is the prescription for universal health care was thought to be the enactment of the ACA, but its future definitely is yet to be determined. Thank you very much.